Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
I agree.
Their second best player is Nervis Solarte. I mean, come on.
Solarte.
They are...
Never nervous. Yang Hervis. City is dead. The stadium is dead. And then an hour later, I'm horned. Yankee Magic. I'm running through walls.
As we always say, you know, the board is the board.
It's the truth.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans! And a pleasure to have you here for the big football show. It's part three of our Super Bowl week coverage here in the city, where we do our game breakdown. So we're happy to get that going. If you missed the previous two episodes of our Super Bowl week coverage, enjoy them on the DITCOW podcast feed on your Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts online. Really good stuff. Part one, we had the prop bets. Part two, we had the fan scene in Philadelphia and New England. And that was a great show. The show that may sneak up on you might think, updates on fans. No. It's a very good show. I would highly recommend listening to that with Ari and Parcells. Last night, speaking of Parcells, we got a special on ESPN, a new 30 for 30. Bill, what is it, Two Bills or Bill versus the Bill? Bill and Bill, I think that's the name of it. And it's about Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick. You know, Belichick was his understudy for a long time when the two of them were in the Giants. Then they moved over to the Patriots. Then they moved over to the Jets. And then things went south, interestingly. They went their separate ways. So it's going to be a very good 30 for 30. Once that comes out, by the time you listen to this podcast, it will be out the evening of Thursday, February the 1st. So that's on ESPN. But here on DITCOW tonight, we look at the game itself. We're going to cover the Philadelphia Eagles playing against the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 52. And we would generally have our football picks panel on with us tonight. Most of them had other stuff going, so we will go and usher in from the football picks panel the man who was very kind to come on with us, John in Connecticut. John, good to have you with us back once again. How's it going tonight, John?
Good, Dave. Thanks for having me on. I figured the least I can do after my disastrous record all year with picks is to provide some analysis for the Super Bowl. But disappointed the other guys couldn't make it. But stuff happens, and glad to be here to at least gotta have a show before the Super Bowl. So
yeah.
Interesting to break down the game and then all the other stuff that's going on.
Yeah, definitely a lot to cover. Also tonight we'll be covering some other NFL news and notes, and maybe even sneaking some golf. And we'll do all that tonight. It should be a pretty nice show. But as we start, we should first talk about the championship round a couple weeks ago, where the Patriots fought off the Jaguars after falling behind for most of the game, and then in the NFC game where the we have so much time tonight, we could just do this one at a time. So let's start with the AFC game. Yeah, I mean, really great defensive effort by the Jaguars, but it all came down to the quarterback and what one did and what one didn't do. It was certainly a very good game, and the Jaguars did everything they could with that terrible quarterback. And, you know, after at some point, the quarterback has to make plays, and it was just such a bummer because it's like they executed their game plan so great, and it still wasn't enough to beat the Patriots. So I wanted to get your thoughts on the AFC game first, and where could the Jaguars have improved upon what they've already done? Like, they did a great job, I thought. So any thoughts on the game from what you remember?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was when we did our preview on the show, I picked the Jaguars with the spread. That was one game I did get right. Actually, I did get both games right with the spread that weekend, which was nice. But, you know, I said I wasn't shocked if the Jaguars were to win because they matched up very well with the Patriots, you know, in terms of the teams that have given the Patriots trouble in the playoffs in previous years. And, I mean, they had an unbelievable game plan in the first half, especially on offense. They had that three tight end formation that they were running all sorts of different plays off of. Bortles looked great. There's like the key play in that half was when it was, I believe it was, I'm going to say 14-3, Jack. No, pages are ahead. Yeah, it was 14-3 Jacksonville, and it was about just over 2 minutes left, and it's 3rd and 7. The Jaguars convert. But, of course, after the play is run, the refs walk in, oh, no, no, delay of game. And, of course, there's a sack on the next play. The Jaguars punt, and then the Patriots go down the field. They get the head-to-head helmet call on Gronkowski, which was obviously that was a legitimate call. No one's going to argue that. I mean, I don't think the defender meant to go head-to-head on the hit. But, you know, hey, that happens sometimes, and that was a legitimate call. But then just a completely disgraceful pass interference play. You remember it, Dave.
Oh, it was just an egregious call.
That was just brutal. I mean, the ball was uncatchable, number one. It was 15 yards past where the two guys were battling. And they were both hand-checking. And the cornerback, I believe it was A.J. Boye, he played perfect coverage. You push the guy to the sideline and use the sideline as an extra defender. And they were both grabbing each other, and that was just a horrible call. Gave the Patriots, you know, essentially a free touchdown at that point. And then it gave them a little momentum heading into halftime. Even after halftime, the Jags still scored the first 6 points of the second half and go up 20-10. So you were just kind of waiting for that other shoe to drop. And there's a couple plays in the second half that really kind of turned things. I think it was a 3rd and 18 for the Patriots. And for whatever reason, I don't know what the Jaguars were doing. I mean, their man-to-man coverage was working all game, and they go into a zone coverage on that play, and of course Brady looks off the defender, makes a great play, and converts the first down, and they go on to score on that drive, and that was huge. And then the Jaguars' play calling, for as good as it was in the second half, it was just brutal. I'm sorry, as good as it was in the first half, it was just brutal in the second half. I think someone charted it out. There was like a shotgun run to Fournette on first down every single time, and it got 1 or 2 yards. And when you're putting yourself in 3rd and 9, you know, 3rd and 8 situations, you're just not going to convert. And, you know, the Jaguars got to stop with about, I want to say, you know, maybe 5 or 6 minutes left. And the Patriots punted from midfield, which was surprising, but they knew what they were doing because they pinned them inside the 10. The Jaguars couldn't get a first down. And then when they punted, the returner takes it to the Jaguars' 30-yard line, and the Patriots only had to go 30 yards to win the game. So it was a combination of things between the officials getting in the mix, the Jaguars, conservative play calling, and, you know, the Patriots just making enough plays and doing what they do. And, you know, it turns out to be a great win. But, I mean, Jacksonville certainly has nothing to be ashamed of. Oh, one other obviously key play in that half was the Miles Jack fumble recovery, which was an unbelievable play on his part. But then the refs blow it dead, saying he was
down by contact.
They
could have gone to the end zone with that thing. Goodness
gracious.
Exactly.
He was going the other way, 60 yards. It would have been 27-10 at that point. The game's over with, you know, 8 minutes left. You know, I know the Patriots could – I mean, they've proven they can come back from it. Just about anything, but at that point, I mean, against that defense, 17 points is a tough hill to climb. So that was a huge play too. So just a ton of combination of things that went the Patriots' way in the second half, and they get the win. But honestly, I was really impressed with Jacksonville. They just been a little more aggressive. I think they really could have won that game. And then, like I said, just a couple breaks don't go their way, but certainly nothing to be ashamed of. And the Jaguars, I mean, they have a really young team, and especially their defense is just phenomenal. So we'll talk about it later once we get to the quarterback situation. But I think if Kirk Cousins somehow signed with the Jaguars, I'd make them, you know, possibly the favorite in the AFC. I mean, they're just that good of a team.
You know, that's an interesting thought because you really only need average quarterback play. You don't even need good quarterback play. Just average, like, middle-of-the-road quarterback play would get it done.
Yeah, Bortles, I thought he played pretty well. I mean, for the most part, I think the coaches kind of took it out of his hands in the second half, but when they were throwing it around in the first half, I thought he played pretty well. I don't know about what your feelings were on it.
No, I thought he was definitely better than he was in that first game against Buffalo. Maybe he wasn't quite as good as he was in the game against the Steelers, but he certainly had a decent game. I guess it wasn't a bad game. But I think to your point about the play calling, it was so predictable. Everybody at the bar I was at was seeing the same thing. They're like, well, guess what? Second down, it's going to be play action. And, of course, it was play action up the middle. And then just, you know, if it gets that repetitive, eventually people are going to sniff that out. So the offense was just less effective because they just kept doing the same stuff. Like, it seemed innovative in the first half, but Then they started doing the same thing in the second half. You're like, well, guys,
yeah,
don't you want to...
I was going to say, it's like they went through their whole playbook in the first half and just like, oh boy, what do we do now? It's like they only came up with a one game plan, but it was really good. I mean, there was some creative stuff they had going on, and they just couldn't sustain it in the second half.
Yeah. And that's definitely stuff that happens when you don't have a quarterback that's good. And so, but you know, the coaching staff did a great job in this game. All the credit in the world to the Jaguars coaching staff. They had a brilliant, even though they ran out of plays, they did have a nice game plan, and it really was well coached. I mean, I hate that the Patriots keep getting calls like that. It's just not right. I just don't get it. Like, you know, it's already they've got enough talent on offense. Like, why do we need to give them plays and give them first downs and give them like short field like that? It's so frustrating, you know. And I realize that Andy might have even made the same point, because I know Andy does feel like the over officiating gets a little overrated as far as talking about how they get favorable calls, but those two calls were pretty favorable. I mean, it does get a little shady at some point. You know, it makes you wonder.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say the refs cost them the game, because clearly, you know, there's plenty of chances for the Jaguars to overcome a lot of those calls. But you can't deny that, you know, it kind of swings momentum in one direction or another and has an impact. So, I mean, I'm not going to say it's a conspiracy or fixed or rigged, but I mean, definitely had some impact with those calls, especially that delay a game call, the pass interference call, and then the fumble return that was ruled down. I mean, those are three huge calls, and you know, I don't think the refs made them because, oh, it's the Patriots. We got to get them in the Super Bowl. But although I can imagine the suits in New York sitting there watching the Jaguars with a 10-point fourth quarter lead, just praying, "Come on, Tom, do something, please. We don't want to see Jacksonville in the Super Bowl." But it would have been interesting anyway to see, because I believe, yeah, the Jaguars have never made a Super Bowl before, so
right.
It would have been interesting to see the build-up between the Jaguars and the Eagles. So,
yeah.
But I guess in the end, the NFL kind of gets the matchup they wanted.
Yeah, and I think we'll get to the NFC game in a minute, but it definitely was a relief for all the marketing people and the guys running the networks and the commercial advertisers. Like, oh, okay, cool. Tom Brady, we can do this. We can work with this. It's like, yeah, but it's kind of unfortunate, you know. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say definitively the Jaguars outplayed the Patriots, but they certainly did for big parts of the game. And so, yeah, like you said, no shame in losing that, but some tough calls, I guess. But overall, like you said, still a lot of chances even at that. And if they had converted a couple more first downs in the fourth quarter, I think we could be talking about the Jaguars right now. So it is interesting how that works. So, any other thoughts on the AFC game?
No, I mean I think we covered it pretty good. I mean, certainly between the two games, that was definitely the more entertaining game, as we'll discuss in a minute.
But
yeah, I think the Jaguars gave you just about all you could hope for if you were rooting for them and rooting for a competitive game, and just kind of, you know, for those of us who wanted them to win, kind of towards the end of the game, you just wish they had made one more play. And, you know, well, there's, like I said, there's certainly a very talented team, and they should be back in this position again next year.
Yeah, and we will, in fact, cover what will happen with the quarterback position shortly, because we have some news to share with you guys from the NFL. We actually covered it in the last podcast, too, but we'll do it in more detail here. So let's go to the NFC Championship. Complete domination by the Eagles. And the Eagles at home can be really, really, really dominant like that. You had been calling this performance from Case Keenum for a while. You thought there was going to be a game where he was just going to have a terrible effort, throw all kinds of interceptions. And this was the game. And I felt the same thing. I just said, you know, he can't play like this forever. He doesn't have the arm strength to be give you consistent performances all year long. And they'd schemed for him great. But at some point, you're going to get a defense that's just so athletic, you can't get away with that stuff. And it was going to be up to him to make a play. And it just didn't happen. And they had actually, interestingly enough, I think they scored early. And they took a 7-0 lead. But after that, it was all Eagles. So your thoughts on the NFC game?
Yeah, the Vikings, they come out and they go right down the field. Keenum just looks unbelievable. They score a touchdown within the first 5 minutes of the game. The Eagles don't do anything on their next possession. You're thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be a huge blowout. And then Keenum throws a horrible pass that gets intercepted and run back for a touchdown. And then after that, I mean, all bets were off, and it was just a complete beatdown by the Eagles. And I would guess the most surprising thing in this game, to me anyway, is I wasn't surprised that Case Keenum didn't play well. Because like you said, Dave, we were kind of waiting for this kind of, you know, crash-to-earth moment from him. You know, we're not going to, you know, he had a great season. We can't take that away. But we were kind of waiting for him to play down to his ability over the course of his career, like we've seen. And that certainly happened in this game. But the big surprise to me in this game was how well that Nick Foles played. And, I mean, they were throwing the ball all over the field on the Vikings, who have one of the best defenses in the NFL, especially the best, one of the best pass defenses in the NFL. And the fact that they were able to do that, and, you know, I think they had three really long touchdown passes. I mean, the Vikings were just completely off balance, and the Eagles could do just about anything they wanted, which that was the biggest surprise to me in this game. You know, we knew that the Vikings would also maybe have a little bit of a letdown game, and, you know, it's crazy to say when you're playing for the Super Bowl, but after such a miraculous win like that, I mean, everyone was crowning them, you know, home Super Bowl. Well, they thought they'd go to Philly and play the game. And, you know, they kind of, I know they came up with the, you know, the amazing drive to start the game, but then they just kind of just fell flat at that point. And really, you know, Doug Peterson, give him a ton of credit for working Nick Foles into the offense. And after how bad he looked against the Raiders on Christmas night and then against Dallas in the last week of the season, they really used their bye week to you know, kind of switch things around. I mean, he played better against Atlanta. Obviously, he didn't play like he did on Sunday. And then in the championship game, just took it up a notch, and they just cut to ribbons, to use a Francesa-ism, that Vikings defense, which, again, was the most surprising thing of the game to me. And he really outcoached Mike Zimmer, and, you know, give him a ton of credit for that, because not many people outcoach Zimmer. He's one of the better tacticians in the league. So, you know, not much else to say. It was a beatdown, and, you know, I took the Eagles with the point spread. I thought it would be a close game, like a one-point game, a low-scoring game either way, and they just housed them. So, and I don't know if you had any other thoughts, or if you were that surprised by the outcome of the game, but I certainly wasn't. You know, how well Foles and their passing offense played.
Yeah, I got to give it to Foles. I didn't think he was going to play that well, but I certainly thought that the Eagles are going to win the game, similar to everybody else, though. I did not think they were going to win by that much. I mean, it really was an incredible effort. Kind of reminds me of the 2000 NFC Championship when the Giants just poured it all over the Vikings. It was 41-0 that game at Giant Stadium. That's crazy, but that'll happen.
Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah.
Poor Vikings. I mean, you know, they get in, it seems like every 10 years they get into an NFC Championship game, and it's just heartbreak after heartbreak for them. I mean, you know, the game against Atlanta when Anderson missed the kick, the Giants game, as you mentioned, when they get in the playoffs, it's heartbreak. Remember Blair Walsh missing the 20-yard field goal
in
freezing conditions a couple of years ago, and then, of course, the other day, or on last Sunday. So tough scenarios there for the Vikings. As a Green Bay fan, I'm certainly not complaining that they're not in the Super Bowl, but kind of got a feel for them a little bit. I mean, they haven't seen much success from their team in the playoffs, that's for sure.
That is an interesting observation, John. I mean, this is a lot of NFC Championship games they've blown now. And I'll give you one more. How about 2009 season when they were at the Superdome?
Brett Favre just throwing away the season to the Saints with under 20 seconds left. Oh, that was pretty cool, I must say. That made it worth it, him going to the Vikings. Oh, boy.
That was I'll never forget that moment. That was, like, unbelievable, you know? Jaws dropping all over.
And then the radio announcer was like, "This is a Detroit. What are you doing?" It was like one of the best calls ever. That was pretty cool.
That's my favorite call. They were bringing up the call when Stephon Diggs made the play for the touchdown. I'm like, no. That's not my favorite Vikings call. It was that one with Favre blowing the game.
Yeah, right.
You could have taken a knee.
And they really could have, too. They were, like, in field goal range, too, if I remember the game correctly. And, you know, that's Favre for you. Always trying to make the extra play, throw them across his body, and, you know, if I remember that game, that was one of the games with the bounty thing. And Favre, you know, give him credit. He was just getting pounded in that game left and right after every play. But it was just, a satisfying end for us that did not like his decision to go to Minnesota for his tenure there to end that way. Of course, you know, us Packers fans have reconciled since. He's in the Packers Hall of Fame and whatnot. But at the time, that was a pretty sweet moment to behold.
Yeah, definitely. Pretty epic. So for the Vikings, the season ends. Very good season. You know, I know that there is a lot of storyline. There are a lot of storylines about the Vikings having the home Super Bowl, but it's always one thing or another that keeps it from happening. And I do know that the stat about teams from a dome stadium on the road, outdoors in the NFC or whatever championship game, 0-14 now or 0-13 now with this game, I honestly don't think that means anything. Like, people are like, oh, man, well, it looks like dome teams can't win on the road. It's just... It doesn't mean anything because this is over like 40 years. Like, there are many different teams that have been represented in the sample size. And I don't think that stat really applies. I mean, the Vikings lost the game because the quarterback just made some crucial mistakes, like the pick six, you know, in the first quarter. And then just the terrible defensive gaffes. It's not like it's the same thing that happens every time that you see this situation. So I do think that scenario is a little overrated. Like, you can write it down before it's all said and done with this league. There will be a dome team that goes on the road and wins a game in the NFC Championship game in cold weather. Because, quite frankly, John, how many any other teams win on the road in the NFC Championship game anyway? Like, it's usually the home team that wins a lot of these games. So, personally, I don't think there's really much to make of that stat.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, if you're into statistics, it's like every game is an independent of its own outcome. It is not dependent on other games. Just because the dome team is 0 whatever, this doesn't mean the next team is at a huge. It's each individual matchup is its own game. I mean, obviously there's a little bit of a trend there, but you can't use it to say, oh, that's never going to happen, because it's not true. I mean, how many years did they say the Bucs couldn't win in cold weather when they had that great defense? And then they went into Philly those years and then just destroyed the Eagles in the NFC Championship game. You remember that? I think it was the year they went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They went into Philly and just beat them down. So,
that's right.
I mean, stats are meant to be, you know, trends like that are meant to be broken. I remember when I kind of first was getting into, I guess, it was my teenage years when it was one of the first time the Packers ever lost a home playoff game. It was to Michael Vick and the Falcons, and obviously they're a dome team. So,
right.
And people thought, oh, that could never happen. So, I mean, those kind of things they're good stats to kind of use as a trend, but each individual matchup is what you really want to look at, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. It really comes down to the people on the field, what happened, you know, the situation, who was playing well, who wasn't playing well, the personnel. Yeah, exactly. It's really, there's a lot more to it than just, well, it's a dome team and they're on the road in the NFC Championship. I don't think it's that simple. So, you know, I it is what it is. So let's see. That brings us to Super Bowl Sunday, and we have said Eagles going against the Patriots. The Patriots trying to throw in a little gamesmanship. They wanted to do the white jerseys because. Maybe it gives them a little bit of an edge. You know, the Patriots have been trying to do this kick where it's like everybody against us because of the ESPN article. And I saluted them on that personally. I was happy about that. I'm like, yeah, stick it to ESPN. These guys trying to stir up a story. It's so dumb. But it certainly has galvanized the team from that standpoint. So they wanted to wear the white jersey just to make it feel like, all right, nah, nobody believes in us, which is stupid. But you get the idea. Like, they kind of, whatever turns you on.
Well, I was also going to, did you know the stat about the white jersey, that the team that has worn the white jersey has won like 11 out of the past 12 Super Bowls?
Yeah, I did see that. And so I don't know if Belichick buys into stuff like that, but it doesn't hurt, right?
No, I mean, if he's superstitious, you might as well stick with it. And you know the team who was the only one not to wear the white jerseys?
Patriots? When they played the Giants?
No, it was the Packers when they beat the Steelers.
Oh, right.
Say
right. I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, in 2010. But
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was certainly a good Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. What a fun, I'm sure, a crowning moment for you, John. Good stuff.
Yeah, that was very, after coming so close when Favre threw the interception against the Giants in 2007 for making the championship game, and then Rodgers takes over, and people think, you know, he's just kind of a stat compiler, and then to win that Super Bowl, that was pretty cool. But yeah, enough about Green Bay. Well, we can talk about the current Super Bowl, obviously.
Right, and so in this matchup, you're looking at really a great defense. And although one thing that I heard from our friend Parcells falling out yesterday, John, he was saying that the DBs, he was not that impressed with them. And he noted that in the first week after Wentz got hurt in the game against the Rams over in L.A., so I believe this was the next week, they had a game against the Giants. The Giants, meaning, and specifically Eli Manning, threw 400 yards against that Eagle defense, which is a little crazy to think about when you see how dominant they've been in all their other games. So it does make you wonder a couple of things. One, is this defense not as dominant when they're away from Lincoln Financial Field? And two, have we overvalued this defense in the way that they've been playing in this playoffs? Because they have played very, very well. And that's an interesting thought. I don't know. I mean, is their defense really that great outside of the line? The line's obviously great. I mean, there's no disputing that. Their line is unbelievable. But I didn't thought about the DBs. I didn't think that they were that bad. I think that the Jaguars have better defensive backs. I think that the Vikings have better defensive backs. But still, I think these guys are pretty good. So that's what's on one side of the coin. On the Patriots side of the coin, you've got some issues with Ron Gronkowski and the concussion issues. And he still, even today, was limited in practice. I don't think it's going to keep him from the game, but you just don't know what you're going to get. And that's definitely an X factor. I don't necessarily think that changes my opinion about what I would think that the Patriots could do. Danny Amendola certainly has no issues stepping up in a situation like that. And Brady is Brady. He's still got the bandage on his hand. I don't know if that's just to play up the situation or whether he actually does have some issues with his hand or not. Certainly didn't look that bad during the second half of the game in the AFC game. So could go either way. Now I'm really, really interested in your preview here because you felt really good about the Eagle defense. I think you may be, I don't remember if you said this, but somebody said that if the Vikings went ahead to the Super Bowl, they would even favor the Vikings over the Patriots because of the defense. So let's get your take on it. What do you think of this matchup?
Yeah, lots of angles to go at this one. Just quickly, I don't think the Vikings would have been favored. I think it would have been Patriots, but certainly the spread right now is Patriots -4. I saw it went down a little bit from when it started. I think it started at 5 or 5.5, but I think the spread would have been Patriots -1 or 2 against the Vikings, so a couple more against the Eagles. But Parcells is right when he mentions the Eagles secondary, and I mentioned this too the last time when we previewed the NFC title game. Their secondary can be roasted, and we saw that obviously in that Giants game where the Giants, you know, every time they went to the red zone channel, Eli Manning was throwing another deep touchdown pass to somebody. And then the game against the Raiders, Amari Cooper beat, I forget the corner, it was either Darby or one of their other corners, just on a double move that's completely just wide open for like a 70-yard touchdown pass. So the Eagles secondary definitely can be beat, and that is the weakness of their defense. So obviously that's what Brady is going to attack. You could see the Patriots throwing 40 or 50 times in this game because that's what they do. If they can't run the ball and they think they can win the game by throwing, they'll throw 50 times. If it's on the other side and they don't think they can do much in the passing game, you know, they'll run it down your throat all game. I mean, that's one of the good things about Belichick. He doesn't try to force a square peg into a round hole per se. He's going to do what he needs to do and go with the game plan that is best suited for them to win the game. And he does that regardless of whether, you know, he needs Brady to throw 50 times or not. But I think in this game, like you said, Dave, the Eagles front seven is extremely strong. I don't think the Patriots will be able to run on them at all. So this is going to be Brady, Brady, and more Brady. And I don't know if they're going to throw deep because you really don't have, I mean, Cooks is obviously a player that you would look for in that situation to do those double move kind of things. So maybe throw a couple deep shots to him. Obviously Gronkowski is going to be a huge factor if he plays, but let's be honest, Dave, if we had to bet right now, I mean, I'd say there's a 99.9% chance he's playing in this game. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. There, I wouldn't even doubt it. And even with Mush, I can't. I think he'll play.
Yeah, right. I mean, let's be fair here. Even if his brains are scrambled, he's playing in this game. Mm-hmm. You hate to say that because, you know, we're all for the increased scrutiny and concussion protocols and such, but he's playing in this game, and we know that. But even if he's on the field, he could be a decoy. I saw one NFL Network analyst, I was watching the post game from a couple of weeks ago, and they were like, yeah, when Gronk went out, it made it harder for the Jaguars to defend the Patriots because, they couldn't really game plan with him out of the lineup. Well, I would think it'd be easier to defend the Patriots without Gronk out of the lineup, but in any event, even if they don't throw the ball to him often, he's a good decoy, and he could space out the field, create open space in the field for the running backs, which, as we've seen, the Patriots love to throw to the running backs. Burkhead, James White, Deion Lewis, all three of them get involved, and they really play a huge role in the game. Obviously, Amendola's come up clutch the last couple of weeks. Chris Hogan, not as much. We haven't seen as much from him. I mean, he's kind of coming back from an injury, but I think Cooks is the guy in this game you got to watch out for. If you can beat the Eagles deep, like I mentioned, if you can put a double move on their corners, he could break some big plays in this game. But I think overall the strategy in here will be to get the ball out of Brady's hands quick, because the Eagles have a fantastic pass rush, and maybe take a couple deep shots. Now, as for the Eagles, it'll be interesting to see what their game plan is on offense in this game. I don't know. I think they can kind of do what the Jaguars tried to do, which was control the clock. They certainly have the running backs to do that with Blount, LeGarrette Blount, and Jay Ajayi. And Clement's been a really good asset, especially catching passes with screen plays. In terms of Foles, I mean, I don't think he can play as good as he did in the NFC title game, that's for sure. But if he can play like he did in the Atlanta game the first week of the playoffs, where he made the throws he needed to make on third down in those big situations. They certainly have talented receivers. I mean, Alshon Jeffrey is a really good receiver. Zach Ertz has been that kind of chain-moving guy and red zone guy that Foles has looked to. He's not as good as Gronkowski, but he plays a very, very valuable role to the team. So I think the Eagles can have some success on offense, similar to what the Jaguars did. Control the ball, Foles will make some plays, and it should be a pretty competitive game. Would you like my prediction now, or are we going to be talking more about the matchup itself? I think you can only go so much on the X's and O's at this point.
Yeah, I think we've so much has been spoken about both teams at this point, so let's lay it on me. Let's get a prediction.
All right, so honestly, I think this will be very similar to the AFC title game. I think the Eagles will be successful in that strategy that I just mentioned, kind of keeping the ball away from Brady's hands, because they know that their secondary is going to be vulnerable. And if they keep their defense rested, that's going to be the best case scenario for them, because then their front four is fresh and they can get after the quarterback better than if they're on the field all game. So I think that'll be the strategy. I think they'll get out to a lead, 7 or 10 points. Dave, the most interesting stat I've read about this game, and when you think about it, it's crazy. In the previous 7 times that the Patriots have been at the Super Bowl with Brady and Belichick, they have not scored a single point. Can you believe that?
In the first quarter?
They scored zero. Yeah, 0 points in the first quarter.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so if you have zero for your Patriots box for the first quarter, I think – I'm not going to say guarantee yourself, but, it just kind of goes to show you how they kind of feel things out in the first quarter and then make their adjustments and go from there. But so I can see the Eagles getting out to a 7 or a 10 point lead in this game, and the Patriots doing what they do. They slowly claw their way back. And in the end, they'll make enough plays because they have Brady and the Eagles have Nick Foles. I think that's what it's going to come down to. And that's not a knock on Nick Foles. I mean, to be put in this position, he's done quite well. Honestly, this game would be really interesting if Carson Wentz was playing, because I think Wentz probably, if he had finished the year, he was going to be the NFL MVP. I mean, he still might get consideration. We'll see. But I just think in the end, just Brady will make enough plays, and I think this will be a really close game. I don't get these people who think it's going to be a blowout. I think this is, the Eagles have a lot of talent on their team. So I'm going to say 24-21 Patriots, which I think is actually the exact score of the first time these two teams met in the Super Bowl, in Super Bowl 39. But that's my prediction. I'll take the Eagles with the spread, but Patriots to win by three.
That's a good prediction, and you are right. The margin of victory was in fact 3 points in the previous matchup, which again doesn't even apply because they're completely different teams. Like even the Patriots were completely different back then, the way they played.
Oh yeah. I mean, they were. I think Deion Branch won the MVP that year, yep. which is crazy. And that was Andy Reid and Donovan McNabb were still with the Eagles, and Terrell Owens. So I mean, that was ages ago. I think the only guy that is still around for the Patriots is Brady, if I'm correct.
Oh, on the field? Oh, yeah, and that's it. I mean, no, that's literally it. I don't even think the kicker... No, the kicker is Gostkowski now, so, yeah, totally different. So, there you go.
So, what's your prediction, Dave?
All right, well, I think in this game, I'm probably going to go... I think that the Eagles can probably launch the ball on the Patriots and get some plays out of that. But I have to agree with you on the first quarter. It's going to be pretty slow to start. I think maybe somebody will get a field goal, and you know, the first quarter might be like 3-0. But Brady has made a very interesting observation, which was relayed to me by my friend Coach, and he said that, you know, once you get to the second half, teams just start to wear down, and the defenses just do nothing. And so it'll be really high-scoring second half. I predict the same thing. And I don't know... I think what's going to happen is the Eagles will go up to an early lead, like maybe 3-0, maybe even like 10-0 or 10-3 in the first half. But the Patriots, just as you were saying, will slowly chip away and chip away and chip away. And then I think like the third or the fourth quarter is going to be a shootout. But in the end, I think the Patriots will hang on and they're going to win 28-24. That's what I came up with. 4-point win for New England against the Eagles. Now, what I don't know is exactly whether the Patriots will come from behind to go up 28-24, or maybe they'd be up like 28-21, and the Eagles get a field goal like, you know, early in the fourth quarter. They have one more shot at it, and then Foles gets intercepted. I don't know what's going to happen with all that, but I think that in the end, it balances out to be a 4-point win. So, yeah, I'm going to go similar score. Maybe you have them winning by three, I have them winning by four. So that's the latest.
All right, so we both have the Eagles with the hypothetical point spread then.
Yeah, yeah. And I loved it when it was six. You know, when it was a 6-point game?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you jumped on that yourself, but even at 4.5, I still think that, you know, the Patriots probably keep it close enough.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm one of those people who like to stupidly wait right until right before the game. I usually don't like making a wager 5 or 6 days in advance because you never know what can happen in terms of injuries or anything else like that can happen. So I really should have jumped on that, but hopefully it'll stay around like that 4, 4.5, you know, line. If it ever gets to like under three, I would definitely not go with Philly, but anything over 3.5, I'll stick with the Eagles.
Yeah, it's kind of remarkable it's come down this much, but on the other hand, I think a lot of respect is being given to the Eagles rightly because I think there's a lot of talent on that team. And I was making I felt like the Eagles are better at every position via the Patriots. So even the DBs, I think the DBs are better from the Eagles than the Patriots. I think the line is better from the Eagles' line is better than the Patriots' line. I think the running backs... That might be a little closer, but I think that the running backs are still better on the Philadelphia side. But quarterback's a huge part of the game, and that's why I think you're always gonna put your money, well, maybe not literally, but you're gonna always have your confidence in Brady to pull it out in the end because he's had the experience in doing so, and that's not nothing. Like that's important. Like having figured out the jitters, figuring out halftime, working out all those weird delays, you know, that's a big part of it. So. Yeah, it's going to be a good test. It's going to be a good test for New England. It's going to be a good test for Philly. And I think overall it should be a good game, and hopefully it is. So we'll see how it goes, right?
Yep, we've been pretty lucky in terms of Super Bowls in recent years. The only two, I guess, duds you could say we've had was the Seahawks-Broncos game was awful in New York. I mean, that was just a blowout from the start. I think the first snap of the game – was a safety. It went over right over Peyton Manning's head, and just went and just from there it was just a complete disaster for the Broncos. And then the other dud of a game was involved the Broncos again, but this time they won against the Panthers. I mean, it was kind of a close game, but it was just a really boring game, if I recall. I mean, it was just Manning didn't do much of anything. It was the last game of his career, and then Cam Newton, they couldn't do anything against the Denver defense. That was just a rough watch for a game. But other than those two, I mean, we've been really lucky in terms of Super Bowls over the last 10 to 12 years. So hopefully we'll keep it going. And it really should be a competitive game. I mean, the Patriots, for as good as they are, I mean, they really don't blow teams out, per se, mm-hmm. in games like this anymore. So they always seem to play exciting Super Bowls.
The largest margin of victory for any Patriots Super Bowl in a win, I should say. The largest margin of victory for the Brady Patriots is 6, and that was last year. Before that, it was 4 and 3 points. So, yeah, it's not you can usually count on a pretty close game one way or the other. So with that in mind, let me ask you one more on the game. The over-under is 48. Now, I guess your final score was 24 to 21. So you would have the under, because that's 45. Okay.
Yeah, I could see your score too, but I just feel I think your point about it being 3-0 or 6-0 after the first quarter is, I think you're absolutely right. So I just think for that alone, that 48.5 is a little too much. I think this will be in the low to mid 40s.
Yeah, definitely. Now, if the Eagles were to go up by like 3 touchdowns, would you feel like the game is in hand at that point?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, exactly. Not after last year. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. The only, even if it was my team, I would feel okay because the Packers have a great quarterback. But it's certainly with the Eagles, I could not. If they were up 28-3 again in the half at the first half, I would not say it's over. Absolutely not. Nah. 28-3 in the fourth quarter, I would say yes. But in the first half, no way.
Oh, no. And especially not in the first half. So much can change between now and then. All right, very good. So that's a good way to wrap it up as far as the Super Bowl. And it should be a good game. Enjoy that. Maybe I'll talk to you later about what your plans are. I usually do this each year. But I know that in the past you've been with family, as I tend to do. So are you expecting a pretty big party for this event?
No, not really. I mean, like you said, just family, a couple friends. I mean, just it doesn't really get, you know, me excited to go out to a huge party to watch a football game, because 90% of the people are just there to, they don't know what they're talking about. So I'd rather be with people that understand the game and appreciate and enjoy what they're watching versus people who are just watching for commercials or, you know, oh, that Tom Brady, he's a cute guy. You know, I mean, come on. We all know those people.
We
right,
do.
Dave?
Yeah, I've been through that too.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we'll just keep it low key, but it's always fun, and certainly do a nice spread of food and drinks. So certainly make a good time out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I don't know if I asked you this before, but do you have a favorite chip? Like, is there a chip that stands out to you?
Oh, boy. You can't go wrong, in my opinion, with the original Tostitos and some just plain, you know, some sauce. I think that's like the classic, and I think you can't go wrong with that.
Solid choices, yeah. I like it. So let's get into some other NFL stuffs. So last night, we saw the Chiefs trade Alex Smith to the Redskins for, what was it, a draft pick and a player, maybe even 2 draft picks. And a lot of discussion already about this, but now that I've had some time to think about it, it does seem like a lateral move for the Redskins from the Redskins' point of view. And they kind of signed him to an extension, basically, he being Smith. And the extension had $70 million of guaranteed money. Oh, my gosh. What are they doing? Anyway, what's your take on that trade?
Yeah, this was a little bizarre. I mean, I get it. They needed to lock up a quarterback, but if you're paying Alex Smith $70 million, you really couldn't find 20 or 30 more for Kirk Cousins. I mean, Smith had a very nice season. We're not going to say he didn't. I mean, he probably had his best best season of his career this year in Kansas City, but he doesn't have the same kind of talent in Washington. The owner is completely dysfunctional, and I just don't think this is going to work out for the Redskins. I think Kirk Cousins is the much better quarterback. I think they should have tried to. I don't think they could have franchised him again. That was not going to happen. But they should have tried to work out a deal with him. I think Smith won't be terrible for them, but really, do you see him going better than 8-8 or 9-7 with the Washington Redskins going forward? I don't.
Yeah.
You could say the same thing that Kirk Cousins really only had one winning season, but just in terms of pure talent alone, you would say Kirk Cousins is a better quarterback right now than Alex Smith. And then to sign him to a 5-year extension, I mean, that was crazy. I mean, okay, if you're going to trade him for a year or two, all right, I could see it, but he's locked in for Alex Smith for another 5 years. That was a little bizarre. And now the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes begins, because obviously he's not going back to Washington. So you hear the rumors now of maybe the Jets, because they have a ton of cap room. It would be interesting to have Ron here to get his thoughts on that. Maybe when there's free agency involved, we can do a quick podcast with the results of that in March. But the Jets will certainly be in the mix. The Cardinals, you would figure, would have interest because they need a quarterback. Carson Palmer is retiring. I hate to say it, the Browns. I mean, I don't know if I'm Kirk Cousins, I want to sign with the Browns because they're clearly going to draft a quarterback number one. But what if they take Saquon Barkley number one, and then you have Kirk Cousins? I mean, that's not a bad. And then you have Josh Gordon already there, and the Browns could hate to say it, they could almost be a winning team with that combination. So that's a hypothetical, but I don't know if he'd want to sign there. And then you have Denver, of course, who needs quarterback, and they still have a good defense. So definitely a lot of options out there. And then I said before, even the Jaguars, I know they already committed to Blake Bortles, but let's be honest, if they were to be able to get Kirk Cousins, I think they would do it and then maybe trade Bortles. So this quarterback market is going to be absolutely fascinating because you have Cousins is available. You have guys like Tyrod Taylor is available, who's a starting quarterback. There's just going to be a ton of movement with this quarterback market and free agency. And a lot of these teams need quarterbacks. So it's going to be a wild free agency process, that's for sure. I don't know what other thoughts you had on the trade or where you think the best landing spot for Cousins would be at this point. But there's certainly a lot of options available.
Yeah, there are. You mentioned Jacksonville, and I have to think that that's an interesting call because, first of all, I don't think they would be smart to just bring Bortles back. I don't think that's going to work. I think, he had a nice year, but I mean, I don't know about night. Well, he had the team had a nice year, but you can't expect that again because he's just not effective. So I tend to agree. I think they might have to go after someone. Do they want to go after Cousins, though? They have a lot of cap room. That's what's interesting about it. Like, they have a lot of money to spend. They could do it.
Do they? I haven't looked in a while. I know they had a ton of money to spend last year, and they did it because they brought in a lot of those great defensive players that they brought in were from free agency. I mean, they signed Boye from the Texans. They signed Calais Campbell. They signed the guy from Buffalo, Darius. So they brought in a lot of talent. So I don't know if they have a lot of cap room. I'll have to check that. But if they do, it's certainly a move that they can think of making, bringing in Cousins.
Yeah, I should double check it too. I got to see. It says here that the team, and this is from overthecap.com. I don't know how accurate this is, but it looks pretty up to date. Total cap liabilities, 195. What does that mean? What is it? Is that really? Well, the bottom line is they have $16 million in cap space. I don't know if that's enough to get Cousins, because wouldn't they try to think? Yeah.
It's not, you said 16 million they have?
16. Now, I don't know if people coming off the cap this year. Like, that's the next question. I don't really know.
Yeah, right. Unless they're right. We'll have to see where they stand, excuse me, on when free agency starts. Because they could obviously cut some guys and rework contracts and whatnot. But if it's just $16 million, I mean, that's not a lot.
No.
I saw the Jets have like $100 million, which that would do the trick.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I don't remember if Biebs was a fan of doing Cousins, though. I think he wants to take his chances with the draft. And I honestly think that might be the smart way to go. Like, The Jets have other things they need to address first. It's like, I'm not sure if that's going to be enough. Like, I think they need to get some better receivers. You know, they've had some good years from the guy. I had that guy. There was one receiver that was pretty good on the Jets. Oh, didn't he just get pulled over for, like, some really crazy...
Yeah,
oh, my gosh.
Robbie Anderson.
Yeah, Robbie Anderson.
He was like a FanDuel star by the end of the year. I mean, he came out of nowhere.
Yeah. And apparently got a little reckless there with the cops. And I was like, oh, man, here we go with the cops again. But no, when you look into it, actually, Robbie Anderson is just being a Mongo this time around. So,
You got to have all the money in the world and, you know, all the fame and feel like you could do anything. You get in trouble.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. So that's going to be a decision for the Jets. I guess if I was to make a prediction on it, where would he go? Cousins, San Francisco would have been a good choice if it wasn't for the Garoppolo trade.
Yeah.
Would have been almost a cinch, but now that's off the board. So I'm thinking like maybe Denver, maybe, because.
Yeah, I was going to say Denver too, Dave, just because Elway has a history of bringing in, you know, making the moves and bringing in veteran quarterbacks. We saw it with Manning. So I think that's a good choice. I'd say Denver too, honestly. If gun to my head, I have to choose, I would think he'd go with the Broncos.
Now, that would make for a very interesting AFC West next year, because let's say you did have Cousins over there with the Bronx. You had them. Chargers have Phillip Rivers, pretty good. You have Mahomes about to do a season with the Chiefs. And then Carr, we'll see if Carr can rebound from that bad year last year with the Raiders. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting quarterback division.
Yeah, that'd be a good division. And I was thinking yesterday, remember, you know, like 2 or 3 years ago, like the thought of an AFC South game on national television would make you like want to throw up in your mouth. But now you have Mariota with the Titans who is ascending. You have the Jaguars who have this complete team. I know Bortles is, you know, you take it or leave it with him, but excuse me, they're obviously a complete team. Then you have the Texans with Deshaun Watson, who in a little flash that he showed you was one of the most dynamic quarterbacks in the NFL. And then if you have Andrew Luck coming back for the Colts, I mean, that's a heck of a division.
Oh, yeah. That should be a lot of fun. And my only problem with the Titans is that they needed a coach that can really do a spread offense. And Mike Vrabel doesn't seem very impressive in the early going. What do you think about him?
I agree. I mean, I know you could say, well, it's all about leadership. I mean, yeah, that's great. And I think having someone like him is better than Malarkey for sure in that regard. I think he'll have him more motivated and prepared, but he's a defensive guy. They did bring in the Rams offensive coordinator to kind of oversee the offense. So maybe he'll incorporate, you know, the spread principles and all these other things that will make Mariota improve. But just in terms on the surface, I thought they should have gone with an offensive-minded head coach, in my opinion. But we'll see how it works out. Maybe they'll, they made the right decision, and this young offensive coordinator can turn things around. But I certainly like that decision better than bringing Mike Mularkey and his 1950s offense back to the Titans, after sir.
No, they did have one moment of sanity letting him go. That was definitely a good call. We talked about Todd Haley going to the Browns already, right? In our NFC show, like our AFC show.
I don't think we did.
Oh, we didn't. Oh my gosh, how dumb is that? Oh my gosh, have fun with that, Cleveland. Seriously,
it's like you go to the Browns as like a punishment for your coaching sin. You know, it's like coming out of confession. They tell you your penance, and it's like going to the Browns for 5 years of inept coaching or something.
I know. And they kept Hugh Jackson. Like, oh my goodness, what are the Browns doing?
They're 1-31 in 2 years. I mean, that's just, it's unbelievable. How does he keep his job after not winning a game? I mean, even if he's the greatest guy in the world and, you know, they had some close games, but come on, he didn't win a game. How do you bring him back? It's just, that's why the Browns are the Browns.
Yeah, exactly. And one more on coaching. Very disappointing to see that the Falcons kept their pretty much most of their coaching staff, in particular Sarkisian. I believe they're bringing him back, right?
Yep. I mean, you know, get ready for frustrating play calls and Julio Jones not being used in the red zone once again next season, and the Falcons stumbling their way to a 9-7 finish.
Yeah, I think we've all had enough of that guy, but more of the same for Atlanta. That's a tough spot. All right, so let's last on NFL news. The Fox Television Network has purchased the rights for Thursday Night Football. They will do Thursday Night Football weeks 4 through 15 in the 2018 season. Week 1 will be NBC. I don't know what they're going to do weeks 2 and 3. That's the one that's going to be interesting. But
yeah.
New arrangement.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's a new arrangement. So you don't have the three-network situation anymore where you had NFL Network and CBS and NBC splitting time with it. NFL Network is doing all of them, but they're just like carrying some of the games, and the other two were simulcasting the other games. So NFL Network will still be in partnership with Fox for these 11 games next year. But I think it's just as simple as CBS and NBC have had enough. The ratings went down 12% from last year. So I think, you know, people had speculated about a saturation point. I think that's their saturation point. I think maybe people just don't think it's that big a deal. So Fox comes in and they pay all this money for it, and best of luck to them, I think is my comment. But it's probably a relief for CBS and NBC, because I think NBC in particular was just having a lot of like complications trying to figure out who to get to broadcast these games, and I think they were done with all the extra work. So they're happy. CBS, I can't speak to what they felt doing the games, but certainly, I think they'd rather just be showing reruns of Kevin Can Wait or something like that on Thursday. So I think they're happy with that too. So, what'd you think about Fox taking over?
Well, CBS can always add a new NCIS show. I mean, always for them. Yeah, I mean, there's some, you know, well, many interesting points to this. So you did say, you know, NBC gets week one, and then Fox starts in week four. But weeks like 2 and 3, and then I would believe it'd be like week 16 for Thursday, NFL Network is still going to carry 7 exclusive games.
Okay. So
they're still in the mix. So they'll get the, you know, the crappy games that, you know, between like the Bears and the Lions or something. That'll be the NFL Network exclusive game, and then you know, you'll see the schedule on Fox, which is interesting. From everything that I've read, is Fox may want to take a couple of their Sunday afternoon games, like their 4:25 games, like their good matchups, and put them on Thursday night, which would certainly be interesting and maybe provide a little more juice to this. I just think it got to the point where CBS and NBC, they just didn't really want to pay that much money every year for something that, you know, the ratings were declining. Even with declining ratings, they still were very good compared to what else is on TV that night. So it's not like they were getting, you know, no ratings. I mean, they were still doing pretty well. I just think they didn't want to – it reached a certain point where they didn't want to pay for it anymore, and Fox said, all right, well, you know, we're losing all of our sports properties essentially, or they're like the regional sports networks and whatnot in a recent deal. Disney is buying all those, so they had nothing. And they said, all right, well, we want to get some more inventory and sports properties on our network, and maybe it'll help us with promote our Sunday games even more too. So the other interesting part of this is who's going to call the game.
Yes,
they already said Buck and Aikman are not going to call the game, and I don't know how I feel about that, because yeah, you know, Buck is, he has his ups and downs, but do we really want to see like Kenny Albert and Rondé Barber calling these games? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Tim Ryan and Sam Rosen. No, we do not want to see that. I honestly, people like Kevin Burkhardt. I'm not a huge fan. I don't know what you think about him.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think he gets a little too over dramatic when he really shouldn't be. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of his. I do like his partner Charles Davis is pretty decent. So maybe they'll get him in the mix. I said the perfect combination would be the college team that they do on the primetime game, Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt. Bring them from college right to the NFL booth. I think that'll work out. But I don't know if they go in that direction. And who knows? Maybe they bring somebody else from outside Fox just to call these games specifically. So it'll be interesting to see who they roll out for that.
That's a very interesting thought. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm kind of curious myself. I mean, they really could go any number of ways. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But I was actually intrigued by your Kevin Burkhardt point. A lot of people have really talked him up. They really think he's pretty good. But it's interesting to hear someone with a dissenting opinion on that. So does he kind of go...
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's like, who's that clown from ESPN that... Oh, like Mike Patrick. I mean, that guy is brutal. I can't stand listening to games with him. He's not like that bad, but he's not like I'm not tuning into a game to listen to Kevin Burkhardt, in my opinion. But the other interesting broadcasting situation this offseason to watch out for is who's going to fill John Gruden's spot on Monday Night Football, because obviously he's back into coaching with the Raiders. And they said the other day that the Pro Bowl. Did you watch the Pro Bowl, Dave?
I guess it wasn't. It turns out to be a recap show. I mean, a post game. But I noticed when I would put it on, I'm like, "Hey, wait a minute, that's that Matt Hasselbeck." And so I'm like, "Could that be the guy?"
Yes, exactly. I guess that was maybe a tryout. I didn't watch the game, so I don't know how he did. But if that's their choice, I have to say that that's probably not the best choice. I mean, you need someone for that spot, in my opinion. That's kind of a blowhard, but someone who is a really strong personality. Obviously, Gruden was that, and I don't know. You know who would be perfect for that, in my opinion? Rex Ryan.
Have an opinion. I think I give you that. You're right. He would have an opinion. That's true.
Exactly. You need someone who has a strong opinion for that. And I know you get on Gruden for his criticism that he loved everybody and whatnot, because that's what he said every game. But he definitely did have some opinions here and there. He clearly spoke about the game, which you need in that role as well. So it'll be interesting to see if they pull someone from their cast of 1,000 NFL players that they have working for them, or if they go outside. There was rumored that they would call Peyton Manning. I don't know if he would do it, but it's certainly kind of the big fish out there, per se, in terms of broadcasting.
Yeah, I don't want to get my hopes up with Peyton Manning, because I would love to see that. I think he's a very engaging personality with commercials and everything, and those few times he goes in the booth to do some guest spots, he's really good. So I love it, but I'm just not even thinking about it, because I feel like that's just too good to be true. But it would be a great fit if he did get hired.
I can't disagree.
Yeah, good times. Let's see. Now, there was another broadcasting point I wanted to bring up. Let's see. Okay. So here's one. This has not been reported anywhere in recent time. I was reading an article from 2015, and it said that Al Michaels' contract runs out in 2017. That's this year. So this is technically the last year of his contract. Unless I see a report that he had an extension somewhere, but I don't think I see one. So it brings about a very interesting thought. Could this be his last Super Bowl? I don't know. And it just hasn't been brought up at all in the media. I mean, I think people just think it's a given. Oh, they'll extend him. They'll get in 2 years or whatever. I don't know how confident I'd be about that. I mean, if Bob Costas was willing to step aside as quickly as he did, you never know what could happen here with Al Michaels, too. I mean, everything he said in interviews is that he loves doing the games. Like, he still wants to keep going and all that. His only complaint, really, is about the replays. He hates the replays. And I hate the replays, too, so I don't think he's really that off base. So what's your thought on that, John? Have you seen any reports to the contrary? Do you think that they'll just re-up him, or would they try to kind of go a different direction, maybe go to Rico for the Sunday night games?
Yeah, I haven't read anything, but, if Michaels doesn't come back, I mean, that's the guy who they're going to put in there. I mean, I don't see anyone else. At this point, they pretty much brought Tirico in for that slot, because obviously Al is on the back nine of his career. I mean, certainly closer to the 18th hole than the 10th, that's for sure. But wouldn't it be interesting if they don't renew his contract and then he would go to Fox to do the Thursday night package? Now, that would be interesting.
Oh, that would be interesting. You're right. That's an because it's wide open.
Happen, but yeah, You know, we certainly, Al certainly gets, you know, gets interesting with the gambling references, and he clearly still enjoys the game. So, I mean, I don't, you know, they're probably just negotiating on a year-to-year basis at this point, because you're not going to lock him in for like 5 to 10 years at this point. So I would assume that he's back, but if he's not, I mean, that's certainly a scenario that could play out where he would maybe go to Fox for those 11 games and then, you know, and that's it. He wouldn't have to do the double duty like he had been doing at NBC. And although he might miss doing a Super Bowl, though, if he wanted to do one more in a couple of years, if he's just kind of floating, I guess, and with his various jobs. But we'll see. I think they'll get something done and they'll come back. We haven't heard, like you said, we haven't heard anything to the contrary that he's planning to retire. So I would expect to see him back.
Well, he's 73 years old. I don't think anything I've heard from him in the last 3 months suggests he wants to stop doing what he's doing. But the fact that there's no contract does make me wonder. So that's something to look out for in the offseason. I'll definitely keep an eye on it. So we will see. And I look forward to hearing his thinly veiled references to this point spread in the Super Bowl. We got a prop bet, John, about whether he would make a reference to the point spread. The problem is, in the fine print, it said that he had to make a reference to the actual point spread. Like, he had to give the number. He couldn't just kind of dig, you couldn't dance around it, which he's just famous for. But if he had to actually give you the actual point spread, I really don't think he's going to do that. I mean, given the choice, would you?
Yeah.
Have him do that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever heard him physically come out and say, you know, well, and that touchdown makes it a 7-point game, which was the spread for this contest. It's always, you know, he always says, it's always something like, well, and that score is important to some and not so to others, or and that score will really make things go over, or you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
Definitely just slips it in. He doesn't outright say it, which makes it fun because you're just kind of waiting for him to say something and catch that quip. But yeah, I would say he's not going to say it outright.
Nah, I don't either. Now, of the three networks that have been doing the Super Bowl in the last 15 years, you have CBS, Fox, and NBC. And of the three, I think NBC does the best job. I think. Even though I still can't stand the player, the individual player intros, that's very outdated. I wish they'd stop doing that. But aside from that, I think the production value is good. It's overproduced, I will say that. I think they go over the top with some of these player profiles, and they try to make a big deal out of every little player. Like, oh, look at that third string center. He might be a factor tonight. It's like, no, he won't. I mean, calm down, Chris. Like, you know, yeah, because Chris Collinsworth just loves to talk up these, like, second and third level players. Like, man, you should have, right. you've been missing out on Nick Foles. Remember that at the end of the divisional game, like, everybody right. counted him out. It's like, dude, calm yourself, slow your roll, man.
Well, he's got to mention his PFF ratings at any point he can get, so that's why he's mentioning that third string center.
PFF, you're absolutely right. So, but other than that, but overall, though, with that said, I think it's a very good team. They know their stuff. Like, they know the rules. They know what's going on. So they usually have their head in the game. And, yeah, Chris Collinsworth certainly has no issue telling you how right he is about something, but he is right, like, fair amount of the time. So he's pretty on point for the most part. And, Al, the same, and great play-by-play. The graphics are often pretty good. I don't really have a comment on the studio team because I don't bother with them anymore, but they're certainly not bad. I mean, Dan Patrick does a decent job of hosting. And I guess at this point it'd be Tirico and Liam McHugh. And I like both of them, so they're both pretty good. So, yeah, no complaints. I mean, I tend to find NBC's coverage the best of Super Bowls in the recent vintage. How would you rate the three networks?
Yeah, I would agree. I would say NBC is the best. You know, Collinsworth can be a little annoying at times, but I think of the three, well, see, we don't know about Romo yet because he hasn't done a Super Bowl, which will be, now that'll be fun next year, Romo doing the Super Bowl.
It's going to be good.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so that's, you know, say what you will about Romo. People were starting to, like, criticize him towards the end of the year. He's the most enthusiastic commentator I think I've ever heard, and I think that's why people liked him so much, and they were kind of getting annoyed at it by the end of the year. But he had some really good information, and just notes about strategy and like personnel and what teams were doing. I mean, those things he was saying about the Jaguars in the first half with their that three tight end formation they used, and that was some great stuff. And you could just tell like the pure enthusiasm he had. I mean, he might need to tone it down just a little bit, but I thought he did a great job. So that'll be interesting to see when he does a Super Bowl next year if he kind of gets a little more polished, but that'll be fun. So we can't really rate him, but I definitely would give Collinsworth the edge over Aikman and certainly Al Michaels over Buck. And Nance or Al Michaels is tough. For football, I'll go with Al Michaels. I think Nance is best for golf, and he's the best golf like host commentator there is out there. But for a football game, I'll definitely go with Al. Although Nance seems to have gotten a little more I guess excitable, you could say, with his call. So he's gotten better, but I definitely think Michaels and Collinsworth is the best duo out there in terms of the lead announcers.
Yeah, and I guess that goes without saying the number three is easily Buck and Aikman, and I'm not saying they're bad because they're not bad. I think they're pretty good, but you know, you never can tell the authenticity level of Joe Buck. And lately it's kind of gone in either direction. Like, he gets extremely excited about something, and I can't tell whether he really is excited about this play or whether he's trying to just throw everything he has into it just to make it more catch more attention from like the media pundits. I honestly don't know. And Aikman, I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of people say that he gets stuff wrong. He does tend to bring up a lot of general statements, and he doesn't really add anything to the broadcast. That's been my takeaway from him. I mean, I'm sure he's enjoying the game and everything, but just that he doesn't really have a lot to say. Like, he brings up points, and I'm like, yeah. You know, it's kind of like
that.
Yeah,
it's like they pull up the replay, and he's like, yeah, and watch this throw. He throws it to the outside. That's just a great job right there by Tom Brady. Well, okay, Troy, I mean, I think we all can see that. Like you said, he states the obvious that, you know, he really doesn't add that much analysis, per se, to the game. He just kind of is commenting on what everyone else is seeing, which is he's a former NFL quarterback. So, I mean, I wouldn't say he's bad. It's just he's not as good as Chris Collinsworth, that's for sure.
Yeah, and we know that there's worse out there. But between the three, I mean, Aikman might be all right. But once you hear the kind of depth that Chris Collinsworth can get into, and Romo, too, you mentioned Romo, and Romo's done a marvelous job this year. Then you just get an idea of, like, wow, like how lacking, relatively speaking, that you get from both Aikman and even Sims beforehand when he was doing the games on CBS. Yeah, he was terrible. I think CBS made the right call. Very shocking news at the time, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like all of a sudden we were thinking Romo was going to go play for the Denver Broncos or the Texans. And then, well, I'm joining the CBS Sports, lead announce team. We're like, oh, my God, where did this come from? And it definitely turned out to be a good decision. And they bring Sims to the pregame show, which no one watches, so we can bury him and don't have to hear from him anymore. And we're good to go in terms of your NFL viewing.
Yeah, good times. Let's see. Oh, we do have some college stuff I can get into, but I guess we're out of time, but I definitely thought it was interesting. What was I going to get it to? No, I guess I don't remember anymore. No. Let's save it for our college preview later. Because I was thinking there was some coaching decision I saw. And I guess I forgot what it was. But so never mind, John. We'll go ahead and leave it at this point. It's really been fun covering football with you all year, though. And I cannot wait for next year when we do our college preview again. I think we might get everybody back, or I'll try to get everybody back to do a recap. So if you're around, I'd be happy to have you for that too, like a Super Bowl recap.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I'd certainly be up for that. But it seems like, I mean, you can only talk about the game for so long. You know, maybe we can, I don't know if we can add anything else into that mix, but definitely what I was thinking about before, Dave, was like a free agency kind of thing after that's over, because there's certainly going to be a ton of movement and trades this year. And we can kind of, you know, look at where things stand after free agency. I don't know, maybe towards the end of March or something. We'll have to play it by ear, but certainly, you know, it's been a fun year, and for giving us fools the chance to come on and make our picks and have some fun. And it's been great, and we'll certainly looking forward to the golf podcast as well. We, you know, bringing Mike after the Masters and go from there. So that always gets us through the bridge between football seasons.
Oh, I look forward to it. We're gonna have a really good series of golf podcasts this year. A lot of juice.
Oh yeah.
Kudos to Jason Day, by the way, for winning last weekend in the Torrey Pines. Oh, what was it? The Farmers Insurance Open,
yeah.
I think. Yeah, it was a great job out of him.
Yeah, and did you know Tiger Woods had the best 3-under score in the history of golf?
Well, if they hadn't told me about that over and over on the Golf Channel, I probably wouldn't have known it. Yeah.
So. I mean, geez, come on. You know what? I will give him credit because I think I could have hit as many fairways as he did in 4 days, and he still shot 3-under, so kudos to him. But really, I mean, if he does that again every tournament, he's going to make 1 or 2 cuts all year. He was so wayward with his shots, and then the Golf Channel, he's grinding. Look at he's grinding for a score. It's just really just give it up. It's just let him get a top 10 first before we say this stupid crap about him being back. This is why we can't stand the media coverage of Tiger Woods. It was you just couldn't get away from it. And you know, it'll be interesting to see when he plays again in a couple of weeks at Riviera, which is that's right by you, Dave. Right?
Yeah.
Are you going to be going to the event?
What week is that? Is it the week of the 10th?
Let me see. Well, it's not. It's not obviously not this weekend because they're in Phoenix.
Right.
And I think next weekend is Pebble Beach. So I think it's the weekend of the 15th or the 18th, I want to say.
Okay. I probably could make that. Yeah. Maybe I'll go pop in for a round or two. Yeah, it'd be worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. You can be the guy that yells mashed potatoes if Tigers are gonna take a shot.
Mashed potatoes. They still do that, huh? Yeah, that's right. Oh, man. Good stuff. You know, I was tempted to go down to Torrey Pines during that tournament, too, but I just had too much going on. I had a little bit too much going on, but there was a little gap. I'm like, I could go down there and check it out. It would have been kind of fun. If I had known about it earlier, like, I might have done that. Like, it's really beautiful down there, Torrey Pines.
Oh, yeah, I know. It looks beautiful. I mean, it's a public course, too. That's definitely one to, you know, for me to get out there and try eventually, but L.A. Riviera is right there for you, right? It can't be too far away from where you live. So
that's
probably more convenient for you. So.
It's almost as good as being in my backyard. I mean, it's not that far off from that. I mean, it's like I could less than 2 miles from where I live. Less than 2 miles. Like,
wow.
It's really close. Like, I can – it still takes a little effort because you can't just drive there. They're going to block you off. But you do take a shuttle or something, and you can make your way. So – So good stuff. Okay, well, John, thanks again for your time here and breaking all of these scenarios down with me. Enjoy the Super Bowl, and we'll do it again down the road.
All right, sounds good, Dave. Thanks for having me on. Enjoy the game.
Absolutely, you too. All right, take care, John. All right, that's it. John in Connecticut, and that's our Super Bowl week this year, 2018, Super Bowl 52. And now it is down to the two teams and the performance itself. The Eagles on one side, the Patriots on the other. Who will win? We will find out on Sunday. It's been a blast, guys. Have a great time. You can follow me at DidCow on Twitter or on the web at www.didcow.com. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next time.